Now we're holding on Yud Zayin Amud Beis, 12 lines from the bottom. We talked about yesterday the fact that we said, what are the various cases in which an Eved will or an Eved Ivri or Omer Ivri will or won't work, continue to work after the master who originally bought them dies? So we said an Omer Ivri never, an Eved Ivri only if he's not nirtza, what he didn't have his ear pierced, and he wasn't sold to a goy. So if he was sold to a goy, or if he's an, or if he's sold to a yid and was nirtza, then he goes free when his master dies. And if it's an omer hevriya, then also she goes free when her master dies. Otherwise, an eved ivri who was not nirtza and was not sold to a goy would work for only if the master left over a son, but not if he left over a daughter or any other kind of heir. So now, so in this connection, we talked about then that if he was sold to a goy, then he wouldn't work for the goy's heirs. Instead, he would go free. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the matter of a goy's heirs b'chlal. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rav, Dvar Torah, Ovid Kachavim Yerushas Aviv. Mina Torah, a goy will yarshin from his father who is also a goy." Which would mean, therefore, in other words, so you're not allowed to interfere and to try to take it for yourself. Don't think, for example, that when the goy dies, his property is free for the taking according to Torah. No, it would actually be also because he has heirs. We quoted earlier in the Gemara an expression of the pasuk that the Eved Ivri, when he wants to buy his freedom, he's going to be megareya pidyona, he's going to pay for the remaining years from now until Yovel. It says he figures out with the one who buys him, and we said v'loyim yoshe kenehu. We said the implication of the pasuk is that he doesn't have to figure out with the heirs of the one who bought him, because as soon as the one who bought him dies, then he goes free. Mikloud isla yoshim. Well, that itself implies that the goy has heirs. Otherwise, there's no yoshik kenehu to be excluded in the first place. Then Rava continues. Ger es ha'ovik gechavim. Now, what about for a ger? Suppose that a goy becomes a ger. So the fact that he yaushins from his father who remained a goy, that would not be minat Torah. That's only midrabban. So had he stayed a goy, then he would be yaushining him on a daraisa level. Now that he's not, then it's only on the drabbanon level, which we see that it's none, as we learn in a mission. Gev ovid kechavim should yoshua sabiyam ovid kechavim. Suppose that two brothers, one's a ger and the other one remained a goy, and the two of them are yaushining from their father. Ger yochel loymel ovid kechavim. So then, the brother who's a ger is allowed to tell the one who's a goy, toilata avodis kechavim v'animos. You have, for example, among their father's possessions, which they're dividing up, their father had avodas zaras, and some of them may have a certain monetary value to them. They're made out of gold or silver or what have you. So the ger, now of course the ger can't use avodas zara; it would be also b'hanah for him. But he could tell his brother, who remained a goy, you take the avodas zara, and I will take an equivalent amount of money. So we'll figure out this statue that our father had is worth $1,000. So you keep that, and I'll take an extra $1,000 from a different part of the estate to compensate for that. Or, for example, he can tell him tol tolat yain nesach v'ani peres. He can tell him our father left wine, which for me is yain nesach, and I can't do anything with it. You have no problem with that, so you could take the yain nesach, and I'll take a compensating amount of peres. But mishabolu shus ger oser. Now he would not be allowed to do that once it came into the possession of the ger, meaning because then already it would belong to him, and now it would be oser b'hanah. So if he had already divided up the property, if they'd already divided up the property, and he winds up with in his part is avodah zarah or yain nesach, then he wouldn't be able to make such a deal. But before they divided it up, before it actually came into his possession, then he's allowed to make such a deal with his brother. Now, continues Rava, v'isakadaitach daraisa, if you're going to think the whole concept that this ger is inheriting from his father is also daraisa, then what's the difference? Kilo bolo shusenami. So the same thing, why should it be any different? Even before it came into his possession. The fact is, isn't he taking something that's a trade for Avodah Zarah? And Tosfos points out that it can't be because of Brera, it can't be that it'll turn out retroactively that was his portion, because then in fact it would be mutter even if it was Bala Rishosai, because even if it did come into his Rishos, we could say the same thing, he trades afterwards with his brother, and we would say Brera. In the end, of course, we say, as the Gemara mentions in various other places in Shas, we don't say Brera with things Daraisa, and the issue of Avodah Zarah and the issue of Yain Nesach are Daraisa. The point is, though, that even if we held Yesh Breira in Daraisa, then obviously the Tana of this Mishnah holds that we don't, because otherwise he would have said the same thing could apply. Even after it came into his possession, he'd be allowed to trade it, and we'd say retroactively that it was considered that wasn't part of his share. The fact that we don't say that, the fact that we make that distinction, must be that it's only Dirabanan. So Elam Dirabanan. So therefore, obviously, it must be only Dirabanan that he inherits from his father in the first place. And therefore, in other words, what we're saying is, to begin with, when the Chachamim made the Takana that he yaushins his father for reasons that we're going to explain in a second, they specifically made it that it doesn't include things that are also Bahana. So only if it actually comes into his possession, then the Chachamim have no power to do anything with that. The fact is, it came into his possession, he voluntarily took it, so then that's his problem. But before he took it, the Chachamim can say, to begin with, or Takana that he yaushins from his father is not meant to include those things in the first place. Therefore, he can say to his brother, look, they're not yet mine. The Chachamim who made the Takana that I can yaushin from our father did not include these things. So they're not mine yet. They're still part of the undivided estate. So you take them and I'll take something else instead. Now, why did they make that Takana? The Chachamim made it Gzera, because otherwise the ger may return to his bad ways. If he sees that because he became a ger, he forfeits the Yerusha from his father, then we're afraid that that might motivate him to say, you know what, why did I bother becoming a ger? I may as well revert to being a goy. In fact, Tosfos says, the fact is, Gershon is a guy who caught into Nerla Dummy. The fact is, he won't be able to undo the fact that he's a Yid. If he does, he won't be considered a Goy. He'll be considered a Yisrael Mummer, but he may not know that. He may think that in fact he becomes a Goy and he gets a Yerusha from his father. He thinks if I go back to being a goy, he knows that in that case he won't really be, he'll be a Yisrael Mummer. He thinks then I'll be able to yaushin him, so he may think that mistakenly. So therefore, the Chachamim made him a takana that he should be able to inherit from his father. And the Gemara continues, Tani Nami Hochi, we learn similarly in a Braisa, Bamed Vonam Amurim Kshid Yoshu, when is all this talking about that the Ger can tell his brother, the Goy, we have things over here that are also to me, but are fine for you, so I won't take them, and you take them instead, and I'll take something else. That would only be when they Yaushin. Avokshin Shtatfu Osir. But if they made a partnership, then it would be Osir. So for example, if they had a partnership, if they owned things in partnership and then one of them became a ger, then you don't have that kind of dispensation. Because after all, then he is having a benefit from Isurei Hana. So you see, the only reason is, so why would you make that distinction? Because the whole concept that he gets anything from his father in the first place is only Dirabanan. So therefore, the Chachamim can make a distinction before it came into his Rishus versus afterwards. And the reason is, again, Shemi Yachzor L'Surah, because otherwise he may think that if he reverts to being a Goy, he'll be better off. But that doesn't apply in the case of a partnership. Okay, continues Rava. Ovid G'chavim Esad Ger. What about the other way around? Suppose the father became a Ger and the son remained a Goy. the ger as a ger, or what happens if both of them became gerim? And we know that even if they both of them become gerim, still each of them is katan shenola dami. Each one is considered only like a newborn baby, and they're not considered to have any relationship to one another in halacha. So Rava continues, that kind of, in those cases, then there's no Yerusha, not Minatora, and not Midrabanan either. The Tanan, as in fact we learn in a Mishnah, or on the side over here, it says maybe it should be the Tanya, Braisa, Lava Mois Minagershin is Gairu Bonavimai. Suppose that a regular Yid borrowed money from a guy whose children became gerim with him. So now the one he borrowed money from has children, but he really doesn't because they're not considered as children mahalacha. Lo yachzu levanav. Then if the father dies, he doesn't have to return it to the sons. V'im hechzer. And in fact, if he does return it to them, ein ruach chachamim noichahemenu. The chachamim do not approve of that. Rashi says means ein machzik in loy tova. The chachamim don't say, you know what, you did a good thing, because he's not necessary to do that. Sometimes we have earlier, there are other mishnayos over there that in Masech the Shavias that talk about things where even though you're not required to do them, if you do them, ruach chachamim noichahemenu. For example, it talks about in the Mishnah over there that technically you don't have to pay back a loan after Shemitah, if there was no prusbol, but if you do, Ruach Chachamim Neuchahimenu, the Chachamim appreciate it, you did something correct. But here, the Chachamim never set up such a takana in the first place, and therefore, like, you're not really doing any, but you're not really doing any Chachamim any favors. Because, in other words, because again, they're not considered to Yarushin. I mean, there's a story, in fact, the Gemara tells us in Baba Basra, a story with along those lines. They are actually there. You have something along those lines where there was a guy who had become a ger by the name of Isur. He had a son named Rav Mori, who Rav Mori had been conceived when his father was still a guy. By the time he was born, his father had been a skyer, whatever. The point is, he's not considered related to his father in halacha, and you have a whole story over there where Rav owed Isur a certain amount of money, and he has to arrange ways that he shouldn't end up repaying it to Rav Mori, based on this Mishnah or this Braisa over here, because Rav Mori is not considered related to Isser in Halacha, even though, of course, he's biologically related to him. So Rava says that you see, therefore, that the fact that a ger should yarshin from his father a ger, or for that matter, that a goy should yarshin from his father a ger, there's no such thing. So the Gemara asked Vatanya, but we learn in a different Braisa, or again, Agoy Sabach says here it should be Vatnan, it's a Mishnah. Anyway, Ruach Chachamim Neuchahemenu, we have another Mishnah or Braisa, it says that the Chachamim do approve of it when he returns the money to the Ger's sons. And the answer is like Kasha, there's no contradiction. Kansha Hirosa Veledosa Shalai Bektusha, the first Mishnah of Braisa that says Ein Ruach Chachamim Neichahemenu is talking about where the child was conceived and born not Bektusha. So he was born and his father was still a goy. So in that case, then Ein Ruach Chachamim Neichahemenu, you're not required at all to return it. The second Mishnah is talking about where, when, by the time he was born, his father had already been misgayer. Now there, it's much more likely people are going to think that he's like a regular yid. They're not going to necessarily realize that he was conceived when his father was still a goy. So that kind also, technically, you're not required to return him the loan, because again, he's not considered related to his father lahalacha. But lifnim mishuras hadin, it would be good to return it to him, because then otherwise people are going to think that he's a regular son of his father, and why aren't you returning the loan to him? So Tosfos asks from that story in Baba Basra, because in that case with Isser and Rav Mori was exactly that kind of thing. Where Rav Mori was born, by the time he was born, his father was already a ger, and here we're saying that Ruach Chachamim Neichahemenu, that it would be good for the Chachamim, that it would be the Chachamim would appreciate if he returns it to the son. So Tosfos makes a distinction. Here we're talking about a loan. After all, the guy originally did you a favor by lending you money. Over there, though, on the contrary, it wasn't a loan, it was pikkudin. In fact, Rava had gone to all the trouble of watching it all this time, so therefore that's different. That's Tosfos brings, Rabbi Natan makes that distinction. Then Tosfos continues, the Ri doesn't hold of that distinction. Rather, Tosfos says, no, the other way around, actually. The distinction that our Gemara is making is actually the other way around. If he was born Shaloi B'Kedusha, then it is a good thing to return the loan or the pikkudin to him, and Ruach HaChamim Noichai Menu, because then it's obvious that you're doing it as a voluntary thing. But when Hirosi Shaloi B'Kedusha, V'Leidosi B'Kedusha, if he's in the situation like Ramari, where he was born after his father, where before he was born, his father had already become a ger, then you have the opposite problem. The problem is, people are going to think that he's a full-fledged Yid, which is, for example, that's going to have implications as far as the halachas of Yibum. So on the contrary, then, when he was born B'Kedusha, then that would be the case. The Ri says, when the Chachamim would disapprove of you returning the loan or pikkudin to him, because then you're going to make people think that he is fully related to his father or to his brother or whatever, and that has implications as far as the halachas of Yibum, and you don't want to do that. And that would be the case with Rimari, and that would be why Rava didn't want to return the pikkudin to him. So the Gemara continues. Rav Chiya ba Ovin Omar Rav Yechanan Ovid Kachavim Yerushes Oviv Dvar Torah. So now Rava had started the discussion by saying that a goy yaushins from his father mina Torah, as opposed to we said a ger yaushins his father only midrabanan and so forth. So now Rav Chiya ba Ovin is also saying in the name of Rav Yechanan, we'll bring a proof that a goy yaushins his father mina Torah. We find the pasuk that Hashem says, don't try to fight against the people of Edom and take over their land, because I've given the mountain of Seir to Esav as an inheritance. So that means, in other words, so we see from that a goy yaushins from his father min HaTorah. In other words, the idea is that that Esav yaushined it from Yitzchak and from Avraham. So the Gemara asks, "V'dum Yisrael mumer shiny? Why? How is that a solid proof? Esav was a Yisrael Mumer. Now, okay, he lived before Matan Torah. There's not really the sharp difference between a Yid and a Goy that there is from before. But the point is that still Avraham Avinu was already considered the beginning of Jews, and therefore Esav, who was born from Yitzchak and Rivka, is in that category as well, except that he voluntarily gave it up and became the Rosha Esav that he was. So you could say, but he's still considered a Yid to a certain extent. So maybe that's why he yaushins. Who says that would apply to a full-fledged Goy? So Ela Mehocha. And that there's a couple of different ways of explaining actually what the Gemara is, the flow of the Gemara. One is that we're talking about, we just said that it means that Esav yaushins from Avraham and Yitzchak, and the question is maybe it's different because he's Yisrael Mumer, and then there's a different explanation that Rosh gives, the point that the Gemara starts with the assumption that it means that Esav was able to bequeath house Seir to his children. But the Gemara says that no, Esav is like Yisrael Mumer, so therefore, yes, he's able to inherit and to bequeath to his children, not necessarily a full-fledged goy. So Ela Mehocha, rather we can learn from a few psukim later, Ki Livnei Loit, Nasatis O Yerusha, where Hashem says, don't try to conquer the lands of Moav or Ammon, because I've given them to Loit as an inheritance, now to the children of Loit as an inheritance, also from Avram Avinu. Meaning, in other words, to begin with, Hashem had promised Avram Avinu 10 lands, the lands of the seven nations of Canaan, plus Keni, Knezi, and Kadmoni. And among the various opinions, what Keni, Knezi, and Kadmoni are that they were the lands of Ammon, Moab, and of Ammon, Moab, and Seir. Anyway, the point is, Loit, there's no question, is not considered part of the bris of Avram Avinu. He's not, he wasn't there when Avram even had his bris. He's not a biological descendant of Avraham, and he wasn't there when Avram had his bris. So therefore, if we see that the Pasuk is saying that nevertheless he inherited these lands and he bequeathed them to his children, then it means that Yerusha applies to a goy as well. So we have, the bottom line is, we have Rava and Rav Chiya ba Ovin both saying the same din, but learning it from different places. Rava is deriving it from the fact that it says, v'chishavim kenehu, that the Eben Ivri figures out with and calculates the amount that he has to pay with the one who bought him, which the implication is Veloyim Yoshekeneu. He doesn't have to make that calculation with his buyer's Yoshim, because even though his buyer has Yoshim, we said he goes free when the buyer dies. And Rav Chiya Ba'Oven is learning it from Bnei Loi. So, but Rav Chiya Ba'Oven, my time like Omaka Rava. So why doesn't Rav Chiya Ba'Oven agree with Rava and learn it from the case of the Eved Ivri? And the answer is, the fact is, does it say any place in the Pasuk this implication that you calculate with Kenehu and not Yoshe Kenehu? No, it doesn't say any such thing in the Pasuk. Yeah, it says, you want to deduce from it, but the fact is, it doesn't say in the Pasuk. So you can't really learn from that. And different Mephoshim talk about, I mean, the fact is he does agree with the din that an Eved Ivri who's Goyish, a master, dies, goes free. He's not disagreeing with that. So how would he learn the Pasuk then? But there's a couple of possibilities that Achronim talk about how Rav Chiya Ba'Oven would explain it. But in any case, he says you don't necessarily see explicitly from that Pasuk that a goy yarshins his father. The Rava, my time, like Omakir Rav Chiya Ba'Oven, and vice versa. Why doesn't Rava want to learn from Rav Chiya Ba'Oven's Pasuk? He says Mishum Kvoda da Avraham Shiny. It's different because of the covered of Avraham, then Hashem would say. In other words, Hashem wanted to grant Avraham these lands, and therefore, so Hashem makes it considered that even those who are associated with him, Loit and Esav, respectively, can inherit these lands from him, but not necessarily that we would say on a regular basis that a goy could yarshin from a goy and bequeath to a goy. So for that, we need a different pasuk, says Rava. There is, by the way, the Rosh over here on this Gemara points out that based on everything we're saying over here, that we were saying that Esav was a Yisrael Mumer and he's able to inherit. So on the face of it, that means that if you have Rachman Latzlan in later generations, you have a Yidush Shmadzich, nevertheless, in principle, he would Yavshin from his father a Yid. However, the Rosh talks about, and then other Rishonim, the Gaonim talk about that. Even though that's true, technically he would. Nevertheless, if at all possible, we try to avoid giving him that Yerusha. Better we should have. After all, we should, if possible, penalize him for going on Shmadingzich, and therefore, if possible, then we should take away that Yerusha from him and not allow him to inherit it. But in principle, Al Pi Torah, he would be able to. Getting back to the dinim of Eved Ivri and Omah Ivriya, the Gemara says, Tanan Abanam, we learn in a Braisa, Yesh be'ivri she'en be'ivriya, the Yesh be'ivriya she'en be'ivri. You have dinim that apply to an Eved Ivri that do not apply to an Omah Ivriya, and vice versa. Yesh be'ivri, shu yotz b'shonim of a yovel of Mrs. Adon. Now, an Eved Ivri goes free after 6 years, or by yovel, or when the master dies, mashenkin be'ivriya, as opposed to an Omah Ivriya doesn't go free in these things. What do you mean? I mean, of course they apply to an Omah Ivriya. So we'll see in the Gemara in a second what the Braisa means by that. How can you say an Omah Ivriya doesn't go free after these things? The fact is, the Pesukim say that they do. The Rashba also brings up the point that you have also the matter of Ritzia, of piercing the ear, applies only to an Eved and a Shifcha. So he says the Braisa is listing things by which he'll go free. Just the opposite with Ritzia, he's not going free, he's remaining further enslaved until Yovel. Then the Braisa continues, V'yesh b'ivriya, shara ivriya yotze b'simonim. On the other hand, an ivriya, an omah ivriya, has something which an Eved Ivri doesn't. She goes free when she develops simonim, the einanim keres v'nishneis, and also she can't be sold twice. Once she was freed, whether after 6 years or whatever, then her father can never sell her again, as we're going to discuss further down on the Amud. Another din is that you can redeem her even against the will of the master. He has to be willing to accept her redemption. Bar-Kocha means Bar-Kocha of the father. The Gemara is going to explain further on that we're going to force the father to be poor to her, even though he's going to say, I'm poor. The whole reason I sold her in the first place is because I don't have very much money. Nevertheless, we force him to do whatever he can to raise the money to redeem her. Mashen can be ivri, where those dinim do not apply to an evidim. So let's analyze this price. So omamayo yesh be'ivri yesh be'ivri she'en be'ivriya or a mini, but I have a contradiction. We said in the Mishnah, yisera all of omahivriya she'koina atzim b'simonim. We said an omahivriya has all the ways of going free that an evid ivri does, 6 years, yovel, etc., plus also simonim. So what are you telling me that there are ways in which an evid ivri can go free and an omahivriya cannot? So the answer is omar of sheshes could go into yada. So Rav Sheshet says what the Braisa, the first Braisa that we quoted, the Braisa that we quoted, what it means she doesn't go free is that if the Odin had been miyad, her yield is a kind of kiddushin. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the details of yield later on. But the gist of it is basically the Torah says what you have, the Odin has the option during the time when she's working for him as an Amma Hevriya, that he can decide, you know what, the money that I paid for her in the first place as an Amma is going to be used as the Kesef of Kiddushin, and she will become my wife. Or he can decide the same thing, that his son should do that. So therefore, the point is, Rav Sheshet is saying, once Yud was done, she's considered his wife. So now she's not going to go free after 6 years or whatever. If they want to separate, they're going to need a get. So we're saying that 6 years, the marriage doesn't expire after 6 years, the marriage doesn't expire at Yovel, and even when his son dies, then she's going to have the regular rules of a woman whose husband died, and if there were no children, then she's going to need Yibum. So the Gemara says, you're order pshita. Well, isn't that obvious? Of course, she's his wife. Gita boya, she's going to require a get, obviously. And the answer is, mao de tamer lo liv de lahuch samina. Without Braisa telling us, you would have thought maybe the original halacha does not go away from her. After all, she originally came into this household as an Oma Hevriya. So maybe the status of Oma Hevriya doesn't completely go away. And therefore, 6 years or Yovel or whatever would be able to make the marriage be over. Or in fact, the Shita Nelonod Lami says, fine, it might not mean the marriage would automatically expire after 6 years, but maybe it would mean that after 6 years or Yovel, whichever comes first, maybe Beis Din would force the husband to write her a get. So Kamash Malan, therefore the Braisa is telling us that she's like any regular wife and there's a get and there's no particular time limit on it. So the Gemara says, Yehochi, amai yotze b'simonim. Well, in that case, if you're talking about that he did yield, then why are you saying she goes out with simonim? Same thing. If he decided while she was a katana that he's going to marry her and he did yield, then she's not leaving afterwards either without a get. So what do you mean yotze b'simonim? And the Braisa says, you're right, hochi kamar. What it means is, im lo ya'oda, if he didn't do yield, so she remained an Oma Ivriya, yotze af b'simonim, then she has an additional thing over an Eved Ivri that she goes free when she develops simonim. So in other words, the Braisa is talking about two different cases. First, it's saying that if there was yield, then she remains his wife permanently, and there's no 6 years of yovel or anything like that. And second of all, that if there was no yield, then she has the advantage over the Eved Ivri that she goes free with simonim, where an Eved Ivri would not do that. Fine. Now, we said in the Braisa, one of the distinctions was v'einanim keres v'nishnis. We said an Oma Hevriya is never sold twice. So what does that mean? The klal de Eved Ivri nimka v'dishna. So does that imply that an Eved Ivri could be sold twice? Vahatanya, we learn in a braisa, bignei vosai v'loi b'kfevai. Now we have like this. One of the cases we talked about at the beginning where an Eved Ivri is sold is where he stole money and he can't afford to pay it back. But the fact that the Torah says, the pasuk says, im ein loy, it says shalom yishalom, he has to pay back what he stole. Im ein loy, if he doesn't have what to pay back, the nimka b'gnevasei, then he's sold as a result of his theft, to pay off his theft. So from the fact that it says, b'gnevasei, means that we exclude from it various cases where we don't sell them. Now we're going to talk about three different cases. And in fact, usually we can't learn multiple dinim from the same word, but over here the Ritva explains that you have the factors. It says bignevose, it could have said bigneva, instead it says bignevose, and so forth. So therefore you can learn multiple dinim from the same word, as the Gemara will often do, because the word could have not been said at all, it could have been said bigneva, etc. Anyway, first of all, we learn bigneva velebikfiloi. First of all, he only gets sold if he can't afford to pay back the gneva itself, not if it's just that he can't afford to pay back the kefil. So we know a ganav has to pay tashlume kefil. So he stole, let's say, $1,000 worth. So now he'd have to pay back $2,000. If he's able to pay back the $1,000, just not the $2,000, we don't sell him as an evet ivri for that. We say the $1,000 you'll pay now because you can afford that. The other $1,000, we're not going to sell you for it. Instead, you're going to have to eventually raise that money and pay him back. Another din, b'gneva v'lo b'zmamo. Another thing is not if he was an eid zomim. Usually we eid him zomim, we do kasha zomam v'lo kasha osa. So now suppose that this guy was one of a pair of eid zomim who testified that somebody stole, and it turns out that that's not so. We don't say, therefore, that we would make, so now they testified the guy stole $1,000, actually. So the Mishnah in Makkah says, actually, when it comes to dinim mominus, we split the amount they have to pay between them. So if they testify that he stole $1,000 and it was two Adim, Zomim, then each of them is going to pay $500. Whatever. The point is, in other words, that therefore, even if he can't afford that $500, we don't sell him as an evet ivri. We'll just have to wait until he earns the money. And the third din is b'gnevase. When we say that we sell him for his theft, we learn from that also. Kivin shenimka pamachas shuv iyata rashoy lemoichoy. Once he was sold once, you can't ever sell him again. So you see that an evet ivri can't be sold twice either. So what did the first braisa mean when it said that an evet ivri could be sold again and again? So the answer is Amar Rava loikasha kan b'gneva achas kan b'shtei gnevas. There's a difference whether there was one gneva or whether there was two. Meaning, so Rashi explains that he stole only one time. So now what happens is, suppose that he can't pay it back. Now, he himself has a value as an eved. Say for example, if you sell him as an eved, you're gonna get $500 for him. So now suppose that the amount he stole was $1,000. So then we're not gonna sell him again and again. Instead, we're just gonna say he can be sold once and maximum once, and that's that. But where there's two different So Rashi says we're not going to actually sell him in the first place. We're not going to sell him in the first place. Instead, he's just going to have to raise the money in order to pay it. Because to begin with, to sell him like that, under those circumstances, you wouldn't be selling him b'gnevasei. The pasuk is saying you sell him b'gnevasei, implying that you're selling him for the entire gneva, and here you're not, because he's not even worth the value of the whole gneva. So Rava is saying, can be shtei gnevas, as opposed to, though, if he stole twice, and then altogether, he owes, whether to one person or two different people, whatever, he owes, let's say, $1,000 altogether, because one time he stole $500 and another time he stole $500. Fine, then we could sell him for the $500. That takes care of the first one. Then eventually Yovel or 6 years or whatever he goes free, and then we sell him again for the other $500. So that would be how to reconcile the two. That's how Rashi learns. Trospus discusses that and says and discusses the some ins and outs of that and maybe not necessarily, and there are also other Rishonim discuss some ins and outs of it, of not necessarily in the case where he's worth less than the Gneva, would we sell him, and then so forth. Anyway, Omalei Abayas, Abayas says to Rava, Bignei Vosei Tura Mashma, just the opposite. Doesn't the word Bignei Vosei imply even many Gnevis? After all, many times the Torah uses a singular instead of a plural. Rashi brings an example, for example, from the last words of Yonah, Behema Rabba, even though it's Behemois Rabbois, but it's a common thing for the Pasuk to use a singular instead of a plural. So Ella, rather, we're talking about one person versus two people. So meaning, in other words, so you can have, he stole from one person, so even, and he may have stolen from him multiple times, then we would say that, we wouldn't sell him again and again. We would sell them only the one time, and that would be that. Whatever money we raise from that, then good, that goes towards it. But anything else, we don't sell them again and again. As opposed to when he stole from different people, or Rashi adds also, if he stole from one person and was sold, and then after he went free, after the 6 years or Yovel, what have you, he stole from him again, and therefore, so in other words, it's not really a matter of different people, it's a matter of different times being taken to Beis Din. So if he's being taken multiple times to Beis Din, then yes, you could sell him multiple times, but if it's all one time in Beis Din, because it was all one person that he stole from, then we're not going to sell him again and again, because then, after all, the pasuk is saying Bignei Vosei, implying, and we said that implies that you don't sell him multiple times. Tosfos has some problems with Rashi's explanation, and Tosfos says the other way around. Rava's explanation of Gneva Achas and Shtei Gnevas would be the other way around. Rashi had said Gneva Achas, you wouldn't sell him again and again, but if it was Shtei Gnevas, then you would. And here Abaya is saying instead it's not Gneva Achas versus Shtei Gnevas, but rather one person versus two people. Tosfos says the other way around, actually. If it was Gneva Achas, you'll sell them as many times as necessary to pay off the whole thing. But Shtei Gnevas, you're only going to sell them the one time. And then when Abaya asks on Rava on that, then we're saying the other way around. When he stole again and again from the same person, then we'll sell him as many times as necessary as to pay it all off. But if it's two different people, then Eina Nimka V'Nishna, we wouldn't sell him. We wouldn't sell him again and again. So two different ways. So in short, two different ways of explaining what the distinction is when we're going to sell him twice, when we're going to sell him twice, and when we wouldn't. The Rambam, when he brings these halachas, he brings similar to when he brings these halachas in Hilchos Gneva, then he brings it if he stole again and again, then he could be sold to two. If it was from two different people, he'll be sold many times. If it was one time, if it was one person, then he's not sold. Then he's not sold a second time. Instead, he just owes it. On the other hand, if he's not worth as much as the Gneva, then he's sold only once. So that would be more similar to the way Tosfos learns. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, and we learn in a Braisa, more on this topic. Gneva Elef, what if he stole 1,000? V'shava chamesh meyas, and he's worth only 500. So then Nimka, v'choz of a Nimka, then he gets sold again and again, in other words, until the whole 1,000 is paid off. So he sold, he works for 6 years, pays off 500, then he sold again and works the other 500. The other way around, if he stole only 500 and he's worth 1,000 as a sale, ain't a nimka klal, then he doesn't get sold at all, because then he's then you can't save a nimka bignevase when some of what he's sold for is not going to be bignevase at all. Rabbi Eliezer says either way, only if his gneva is equal to the amount he's sold for, only then is he sold. And if not, he's not sold. So Amar Rava, Bahaza Kanu, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbanan. In this, Rabbi Eliezer seems to have the better argument against the Chachamim. Because after all, you could say, why would you say that when he stole 500 and he's worth 1,000, the Chachamim agree that you don't sell him you can't sell him the nimka kula amar achmanav alechetz, because the pasuk is v'nimka b'gnevosay, implying that he is completely sold for his gneva. So v'lo nimka b'chetzay, so v'lo chetzay, not half of him is sold. Hachinami nimka b'gnevosay amar achmanav v'lo nimka b'chetzay gnevosay. You could say the same thing when it says b'gnevosay, implies he has to be sold for the entire gneva, not for half of it. So therefore, Sir Rabbi Eliezer seems to have the better of the argument over here, that he would only be sold only if his value is equal to the Gneva and not more and not less. However, even though Rava is saying he has the better of the argument, the halacha is like a chachamim, as it usually is. And so therefore you have the din that if here's how the Rambam paskins it, that if the ganav is worth less than the Gneva, then you'll sell him and eventually he'll pay back. And eventually he'll pay back the rest. You won't sell him again, because we said before, Abaye had said, "Ba'odemechad," you don't sell him again and again. And in fact, actually, when you have in the Gemara over here in the Tanakhama, Nimker, v'choz of a Nimker, Hagoyes Hagrua points out that the Rambam's gear says, "Ve'enech choz of a Nimker," you don't sell him again, because we still have to make it fit with what Abaye had said before. So what you have is like this, therefore. If he's worth less than the Gneva, then we say we sell him the one time, and that's it. He works off that part of the Gneva, and then the rest eventually he's going to have to pay. But if he's worth more than the Gneva, then the Chachamim agree that you don't sell him, that you don't sell him again. And then what happens is, again, then you have the din that we were talking about before. If he stole again, then you have, there's a distinction whether he stole from a second person or from a first person, or again from the first person, like Abaye said, kan ba'odem echad, kan mishnei b'nei odem. So the Rambam rather is going more like Rashi in that regard, that if he stole again the Rambam is going really neither like Rashi nor like Tosfos. If he stole from the Rambam is learning that if he stole from the same person again, you don't sell him, period. Even though, as Rashi was saying, it would be a new din Torah, we're saying that he stole again and again from the same person, and we sell him again until he pays off the whole thing. Then Rambam is learning the Gemara in a more straightforward way and saying, no, nothing of that. Just if it's one person, gzeiras hakosev, that you don't sell him again. But if it was a second person, then yes, then kan b'shnei b'nei adam, then we would sell him again and again. So we have different ways of understanding the sugya over here. Okay. Now, we said in the Braisa, another distinction between an Eved Ivri and an Omo Hevriya, u'maftin oisa b'al kochay. We redeem the Omo Hevriya against his will. Well, against whose will? Sava rov l'mem b'al kochay d'adam. Rava thought it meant Bal kochay of the master, that he has to be, that we force him to accept to accept whatever is being given for hupidya. But Omale Abaya, mind you, what do you mean by that? De kasavna le shtara adome. You're telling me evidently it means that we could write a shtar for her value. That's a shtar choiv. So in other words, he may not have the money available, but there is a shtar. Now, the fact is, in other words, the Ritva points out, if we're talking about giving actual money, and Eved Ivri can do that also, so obviously we have to be talking about where there's no money available and only a shtar is being written, but how can we do that? Amai, why should we do that? Nokit Maganisa Biyodev Yehibna Lechaspa. What are we doing over here? He had a pearl in his hand, and instead we're forcing him to give it up and take a shard of earthenware. Meaning, what's the logic that we should say? He has a valuable omahevriya, and we're gonna tell him in return you have to take a piece of paper that says eventually you're gonna be paid back. How can we do that? So Abai says, no, what it means, Baal Korchai, means we force the father to redeem her if he has money, because so he can't say, in other words, well, okay, now I've managed to earn some money, but still I have better things to spend it on. No, we tell him you have to spend that first thing to get your daughter out of being an omahevriya, mishum gam mishpacha, because of the derogatory thing about the family. The family will be embarrassed that their relative is an omahevriya. So the Gemara says, yihochi evan ivi nami nechbinu levnei mishpacha, mishum gam mishpacha. Well, shouldn't the same logic apply to an evan ivri as well, that we should force the relatives to buy him back? And in fact, the Ritva explains, we're talking about over here, suppose that some of the relatives are saying, you know, we're very embarrassed, we should do it, but they don't have the money for it, let's say, and others of them don't want to. So why don't we say that the first group should be able to force the second one? And the answer is the answer is Hodr Ozil or Mazbin Nafshe. After all, what good does it do? If they redeem him, then he's just gonna go sell himself again. So the Gemara says, so with the Omahevriya also Hochanami Hodr Ozil Umazbinla, new, and with the Omahevriya, won't you have the same thing? If we force the father to redeem her, then he's gonna buy her, then he's gonna sell her again. No problem. Hokatani, and in the Keres Phoenicianist. The Brai said such, she can't be sold again. So therefore there's no possibility of him doing that. Therefore, we can say, yes, we do force him to do that. But by an Eved Ivri, where the Eved Ivri can always go and sell himself again, we're not going to force his relatives to redeem him, because we don't want to just have him use them as a source of free money. So the Gemara says, Umani Rib Shimini. Now, who would that Braisa that we said that she can't be sold again, who would that be like? That would be according to Rib Shimini. The Tanya, as we learn in another Braisa, Moicher Odom as Bita Leishus V'Shoina, a man can sell his daughter for Ishus, meaning for Kedushin, and do it again. Meaning, in other words, we know that a father receives the Kesef Kedushin for his daughter when she's a Ketana or a Naira. So if he received money for her Kedushin, which the Gemara is calling it selling, it's not selling per se, but we're using it because we're going to use that expression with an Omahevriya. So if he received Kedushin money for her, and then she was widowed or divorced, still doing the Kedushin, once she reaches Nisuin, then she's out of the Rishos of her father. But here we're talking about where only the Kedushin was done, and she's still a Ketana or a Naira, and now she was widowed or divorced, then he could again get Kesef Kedushin for her. L'shifchus v'shoina, the Braisa continues the same thing as far as being a Shifcha, as far as being an Omahevriya. After she goes free, he'd be able to sell her again. Provided that she doesn't have simonim. Rashi points out from a different Gemara that says once she develops simonim, even though it's true, she's in the reshus of the father still, nevertheless, we have a kalachomer that says she already went free by simonim, he certainly can't sell her again. Anyway, similarly, you can also have that he sold her to begin with as an omahevriya, and then after she goes free and she's still a ketana, he can or naira, he can still receive kedushin money for her. But not the other way around. If he had received kedushin for her and then she was widowed or divorced, then he can't sell her as an omahevriya. That's the Tanna Kamma. Reb Shimon Omer. Reb Shimon says no. Kesheim she'enonam moichas bito l'shifchos achar ishus. The same way as that last case where you can't sell her as a shifcha after kedushin. Kach enonam moichas bito l'shifchos achar shifchos. The same way Reb Shimon says he can't sell her as a shifcha after having sold her once as a shifcha. So the braisa that we said before, enonam keres v'nishnes, would be according to Reb Shimon. So, and the Gemara says, "Replugta dahani tanoi." Now, the machloikas between the Tanna Kamma and Reb Shimon is the same machloikas as Udi or Tanoim, where Rabbi Yezer and Rabbi Akiva also argue within the drasha of the pasuk. The Tanya, we learn in a brisa. Now, the pasuk says like this: talks about the omahevriya. It says, "La'am nochri la'yim shalomachra bevigdei ba." He does not have the power to sell her to a foreigner, meaning to a different person, to a different person, bevigdeiva. Now, what does bevigdeiva mean? The word bigdei can mean meloshen boiged, which means to be disloyal, or it can mean meloshen beged, meaning clothing. So, the Tanya, we learn in Hebrew, so when it says bevigdeiva, meaning kiven shapiris talisa aleha, once the Odin, or whoever she was niskadish to, has spread his talus over her, which is a way of, which is a figure of speech, meaning that they did kiddushin. You find the pasuk by Rus, where in the granary by night, when she tells Boaz, for rasta kafecha ala masecha, you should spread your talus over your maidservant, meaning me. In other words, marry me. So once the talus has been spread over her, shuv en rashoy lemochra, then the father is not allowed to sell her. That's what the pasuk would mean. La'am nochri le'im shalomochra bevigdeiva, once the beged has been spread over her. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. That's how Rabbi Akiva learns the pasuk. Rabbi Eliezer and bevigdeiva, whereas Rabbi Eliezer says that no, what it means is the word bevigdeiva is meloshin boiged, meloshin being disloyal. Kiven shebogad ba, once her father was disloyal to her and sold her as an omer hebriya, shuven rashoy lemoichra, then he's not allowed to sell her again. So Rabbi Eliezer would be like the Tanakama of the previous braisa. Rabbi Eliezer rather would be so the Tanakama and the braisa had said that he could sell her the shifchus v'shoina. So that would be according to Reb Shimon had said not. So Rabbi Eliezer would be more like Reb Shimon, that he can't sell her l'shivchus achashivchus. Rabbi Akiva would be when Rabbi Akiva was saying that once she was niskadish, then he can't. That would be what the Tanakama had said. Avoloi l'shivchus achashivchus. So they're essentially having the same. So they're essentially having the same machlokes. So in short, that's how it is. The father doesn't have the ability, according to Rabbi Akiva, once piras talisit odin aleha, once there was yield or kedushin or whatever, then if he divorces her, then he can't sell her again. But therefore we parse the pasuk like this: asher lo ya'oda, if the master had not done yield with her. Now you have like this in the pasuk over there. You actually have a kriyuksiv where you have a shalo yoda. It's written with an aleph, but we read it as though it was with a vav. So a shalo yoda, if he did not do yield with her and instead she returned to the father, then he would be able to sell her again. But Rabbi Eliezer is saying that Rabbi Eliezer is saying that not. Now, Rashi points out that Reb Shimon actually is sort of taking both positions. He's sort of agreeing with Rabbi Eliezer and with Rabbi Akiva. He darshens the word bevigdoi like Rabbi Eliezer, that it means meloshen boged, meloshen treachery. So he was disloyal and treacherous to her and sold her, then he's not allowed to sell her again. He also, though, agrees with Rabbi Akiva's drasha that kiven shapiras talisei aleha, so that's why he says that it can't be either. Once there was either ishus or shifchus, then he can't sell her again. In other words, Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim are not completely repeating the machloikas of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, but they're following along those lines. The Tanakama holds like Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Shimon is holding like a combination of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer. So the Gemara says, what is the underlying machloikas? Rabbi Eliezer sava yesh em masodas, but Rabbi Akiva sava yesh em mikra. Rabbi Eliezer holds that when it comes to darshaning psukim, the main thing you have to follow is the mesodis. You have many times where a word is written a certain way in a pasuk, and we could read it multiple possible ways, but then we have the mesoda. We have the mesoda of how it's written in the Sefer Torah. Now, the word bevigdoi, we do pronounce it bevigdoi, where it's clear that it means that it means meloshin beg. So the word bevigdoi means meloshin beged, because if it meant disloyal, then it would have different nekudos. But it's written in the Torah beis veis gimel dalet vav. Therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says you darshan the way it's written. So we can darshan as though it said bevogdoi, which means that he was disloyal to her. If it meant bevigdoi, then there would be a yud in there. There would be a yud after the second beis, and then it would be clear that it's a chomer. Then it would be clear that it's a chivit. But without that yud,
Then without that yud, then it means, then we can read it as though it was with a comet, and therefore, so he says, so therefore we darshan the pasuk as though it said bevogdai, meaning that he was disloyal. So once he was disloyal to her by selling her, then he can't, then he can't sell her again. But Rabbi Akiva sava yesh em l'mikra. Rabbi Akiva says you primarily go according to how the pasuk is read. The fact is, we do read it bevigdai, which can be understood as maloshin beged, because the possessive of beged is bigdai, his garment. So therefore, we can understand it that way, and therefore, that's what it means, that once he spread his garment over her, once he did kedushin with her, then the father can't sell her as a shifcha after that, but he could sell her as a shifcha the second time after selling her as a shifcha the first time. So Rabbi Akiva learns that way. Reb Shimon Sava Yesh Em Mikra Ula Masoras. Reb Shimon is going to hold, you have to follow both of them. You have to look at the Mikra, and you have to look at the Masoras. And therefore, Rashi points out there were other Gemaras where Reb Shimon holds only Yesh Em Mikra. That's where they contradict each other. But here they don't necessarily contradict each other. Each one is telling us a different din. One, if there was kedushin, and the other, if there was a sale as an omayriya. Therefore, Reb Shimon says you can douch in both of them, and the result is if there was either one, then you can't sell her as a shifcha after that. Tosfos discusses in some further detail about the possibilities over here about the vigdoy and the vogdoy and how the pasuk could have written it. Usually in the Torah, you wouldn't have a yud over there. You wouldn't have a yud over there in the first place. So what does Rashi mean to say that you would have expected it to have a yud? And if not, then we could read it another way. But Tosfos rather explains, not a matter of how the word is spelled. It's rather more a way of how the other words around it. If it meant bevigdoy, that he was disloyal, then you would expect it to see, then you would expect it, or the other way around. If it was bevigdoy, as in the clothing, then it should say bevigdoy olah rather than bevigdoy va. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva can say that it means that therefore, Rabbi Eliezer would say that you go more Moloshin Begidda, Moloshin being disloyal, whereas Rabbi Akiva disagrees with that. And then Tosfos mentions another possible Girsa, maybe we have to flip around Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva's opinions. So you have the two different opinions, whether you can sell the Shifchos, Acha Shifchos, or not. Okay, now let's start talking about yield. We said that the master has the option of being miyayed, of saying that this Alma Hevriya should become his wife, that the money that was used for Kedushin, that the money that was used for selling her, rather, is going to be used as the money of Kedushin. So, boy, Rabba Baravua, yud nisuin oisa or erusin oisa? When he does yud, does that accomplish full nisuin, and therefore we don't need chuppah or anything else, or does it accomplish only erusin, and say that that still chuppah, that nisuin and chuppah are still needed. Nafkamina, and the nafkamina would be as usual between eros and nisuin. Leyosha, would he yaushin her? If he did yield and then she died, does he yaushin her? If there's nisuin, then yes. If there's not nisuin, then no. Vilitamila, if the master is a koyin, can he be matame for her if she dies? Olahofer nidareha, if she makes a neder, can he be made for that neder or not? So what would be the din? Toshma, so let's prove from this machloikas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva that we just had. Bevigdeva, where we said that Rabbi Akiva understood the word bevigdeva to mean kibin shapiras talisa aleha, once he spread his talis over her and did yield, shuv einu rashoi lamoichra, then her father wouldn't be able to sell her again as a shifcha after that. Even if her husband then died or divorced her, implying zabuni hu delo mezabin la, implying he can't sell her anymore. Rabbi Akiva is saying, but ha yeudi miyayed la, but he would be able to be miyayed, meaning makadish her to somebody else. We're not really using yield specifically. Yield is the specific thing for an oma hevriya to her oden. What we mean is we're using yield in the more broader sense of kiddushin. So it sounds like he would be able to be makadish her again. The iam nisuin oisa. If you said that the yield with the odin creates nisuin, well, we know kiven de nisus shuvain lavi or reshuspa. Once she has nisuin, her father has no more reshus over her. So therefore, of course, he can't accept kedushin on her behalf. So obviously, doesn't that mean that you would accomplish his only kedushin? And the answer is Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchok. So Ela Lav Shema Mina Erusin. Wouldn't that show therefore that you would accomplish his only Erusin? And therefore, we have the usual rule: if she's still a Ketana or a Naira, and only Erusin was done, then we just said at the bottom of Amar Aleph that her father would be able to be Mekadosh her again after that. However, Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchok, not necessarily Hocha B'Kedushin De Alma Kari. No, because this Braisa is not necessarily talking about Yud specifically. It's talking about Kiddushin in general. The Braisa means Kibin Shemosra Avil Mishnah Schayv Shairok Susa Vainosa. Once the father has given her into for Kiddushin to somebody who is going to be Chayev in She'erok Susva Oina, where the Pasuk goes on to say that the Odin is responsible to that, so he's responsible for those three things to the Omo Hevriya if he marries her, and the same thing is true as far as every Jewish husband and wife. So then Shuvein Yochel Moichra, then he can't sell her as a Shivcha Knanis again, but as an Omo Hevriya rather. But not necessarily is the Braisa talking about what happens after Yud. Maybe, of course, after Yud, he can't accept Kiddushin on her behalf, because then maybe Yud has accomplished Nisuin and he has no further rights over her. Okay, the Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring a different proof. Ein Moichra L'Kroivim. A Braisa says that the father cannot sell his daughter as an Omo Hevriya to relatives who would be also to marry. On the other hand, they said in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, or Rabbi Lazar, it says on the Rabbi Lazar, Mephoshim say that you could also sell her to relatives because the fact that now what it is the Gemara is going to explain later on. It depends what kind of, even according to the Tanakhama, depends what kind of relatives we're talking about. You can have where the relative himself is also to marry her, but his son would be able to marry her. In that case, there's not a problem with it. Even the Chachamim would agree that that's fine because yield could be accomplished. Let's say, for example, the father of this daughter wants to sell her to his own father. So she wouldn't be able to marry his father because that would be her grandfather. But she is allowed, her father could then do yud with another one of his sons, which would be her uncle. That's fine. A niece can marry her uncle. But anyway, so the Tanakhama is saying, though, where it's not possible to do yield with either one of them, for example, let's say the father wants to sell her to one of his own sons, should be also to marry the Odin himself, because he's her brother, should be also to marry the Odin's son, because she's his aunt, and an aunt is not allowed to marry a nephew. So then the Tanakhama is saying you can't do that, but they said in the name of Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Lazar that you could do that, because he holds, just so you can't do yield, doesn't matter, that doesn't prevent the same. The Shovin, but they do both agree, Shemoichra Almona L'Kohen Gadol, that he could sell her, even if she's an Almona, he could sell her to a Kohen Gadol. I, a Kohen Gadol, can't marry an Almona, doesn't matter, Kiddushin or Toifus. Grusha V'Chalutza L'Kohen Hadyet. Similarly, if she's a Grusha or Chalutza, he could sell her to a Kohen Hadyet, even though she'd be also to them, but she is, it's only a Chai V'Lavin, and Kiddushin or Toifus. So the point is, hi Almana, hey Fidomi. So we have to ask, what's the scenario involving an Almana where you're saying that he could sell her? Ilema de Kaddish Nafsha, are you talking about where she was Makadish herself, where she as a Tana, because that's when she's sold as an Oma Ivriya, she accepted Kedushin on her own behalf? Almana Karila, how could you call her an Almana? Kedushin are not Chal B'chlal. She has no ability to do that. Only her father can be Makadish her at that age. So obviously you have to be talking about that her father accepted Kedushin on her behalf. So then you would have to ask, well then how would he be able to sell her? Didn't we say before that according to Rav Akiva anyway, and the Halacha is like him, that you can't sell the Shifchos Achar Ishus. So once she was in the Skadish, you can never sell her as an Omer Evriya. And sort of Amram explains we're talking about specifically not regular kedushin but rather kedusha yud. Our Braisa would be following Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, who says further on in the Gemara that the original money was not given for kedushin, meaning, in other words, that he has to give Meaning, in other words, that we don't say that the up until now we've been saying that yield is that the original money that was given, that was paid for her to begin with, becomes the money of kiddushin. But now we're saying that Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says, to begin with, when she was sold, that money was not meant for kiddushin. How is he miyayed her? Because the fact is, there's work that she has to do for him, and instead he's freeing her of that and making her his wife instead with that.
What if they still left over Sevaputa?
It doesn't matter when the Sevaputa we're talking about. Moisir Rishonis love the Kedushin Nitnu. The point being, in other words, therefore, that Kedushin, if we say Moisir Rishonis the Kedushin Nitnu, then we mean, in other words, the father received that money. So therefore, that's fundamentally the equivalent of Kedushin. But if we say he's being Makadish, as Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda says, as we'll learn tomorrow about Hashem, that that he's being Makadish her with the work she still has left. Well, then the father has nothing directly to do with that. So there was no Kedushin that involved the father. So now, therefore, what Rabbi Akiva had said before, Kivin Shapiris Talisa Alea, Shuvan Rasho the Mechra, because that would only be if the father had been Makadish her, and here he can't. So, and here he didn't, rather.
You're talking about Megira, right?
So we're talking about
Megira, what's ever left over? Yeah. Megira.
I don't know.
Money that's left over.
Yeah. Okay.
The balance.
We're not talking about the balance. We're talking about Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda saying it doesn't matter whether there's a balance. It matters whether there's still avos. The fact that she's still his shifa is good enough for you. Anyway, the point is, so now we've established how we have a scenario where she could be an almana and still conceivably be sold as an omah hevriya. So now the iyamet nisuin oisa. After all, if you say that the yield accomplishes nisuin, so what? Once nisuin has been accomplished, the father never has any reshus over her in the first place. So you can't even talk about him selling her as an almana. The whole scenario that we constructed over here, where according to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, the scenario is she was sold as an omah hevriya. Now her odin is makadish her with yield, not as a result of the money, like the chachamim say, but rather like Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda says, with her work. And now she becomes an almana. So now you're saying that her father could sell her even to a kohen gadol, even though the kohen gadol is also to marry her because kedushin would be toifis, but that would only work only if the yield that the odin had done would create erusin rather than nisuin.
So he never had relations with her.
So that's the point. The point is, in other words, that therefore that establishes that it's not considered to be nisuin yet; it's only considered to be erusin, and therefore nisuin would still be necessary afterwards for them to become complete husband and wife. So the Gemara says, "Ve'elamai erusin oisa." So what are you going to tell me then? You're going to argue that yield accomplishes only erusin. So what do you mean, v'shavin shemoichra? What do you mean that both the Tanakama and Rabbi Lozer would agree that he could sell her as a shifa? Why? We said before that once there was issues, he can't sell her as a shifa. So either way, even if it was only erusin, he still wouldn't be able to. Elamai islachomei mashaini erusin didome erusin davia. You could say the answer is that there is a difference between erusin that were accomplished by her, meaning without her father being directly involved. Again, like we're saying, according to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, where the erusin, the yield, is accomplished without her father directly being involved. So afilu tamer nisuin oisa. So you could maybe even say nisuin would even maybe even yield would accomplish nisuin, and you could still say shiny nisuin nidam nisuin davia. You could still say there's a difference between nisuin that were accomplished by her father giving her over for nisuin, where there she's out of his rishus and he can never do anything with her again, whether kedushin or sales, versus where she herself marries the odin with her work, as Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda is saying. You could argue that maybe her father hasn't completely forfeited rishus over her. So you could say maybe that way. And therefore, you could actually argue that the yield does even accomplish nisuin, and nevertheless, you could still say that the father has a certain degree of ownership of her, to the extent where now he could sell her conceivably as a shifcha again, and therefore we're saying that even if she's an almana, he could sell her to a kohen gadol. So we could say that it's not necessarily a solid proof that the yield accomplishes only kiddushin.
So let's say she sells herself for the money. The nafsha, she sells herself.
Whoa, stop! She didn't. She never sells herself in the first place.
She buys. She does it.
Whoa! We're talking about yield over here. We're talking about the master does yield. He says, "I would like you to be my wife." We talked about, and we're going to talk about further in the Gemara tomorrow. Baz Hashem, We'll stop over here and we'll finish the discussion tomorrow. But according to the Chachamim, what it is we say, how is that accomplished? Because money was paid for her to begin with, and that money now becomes Kesef Kiddushin. Meaning, in other words, in effect, the father has done Kiddushin for her as in the usual way, except that it was done in a bit of a roundabout way by selling her as a Shifcha, by selling her as an Oma Hevriya first. But therefore, so we would say that after Ishus, he can't sell her again as a Shifcha. But if we say, like Rabbi Yossi Ben Yehuda, that it's completely voluntarily on her part, there's no Kesef Kiddushin involved, the master is buying her with her avdus, then we could argue that that's different. Maybe the father still retains rights over her, and we could say that even if Nisuin has been accomplished.
Why would the father retain rights over her if she sells with her own money? That's her herself. She's doing
she
it
didn't
her
sell
own
herself
money.
Because the fact is he didn't receive Kesef Kiddushin for her yet. So therefore, still the fact is she's still a Ketana. And therefore, he still has certain rights over her, including the right to be Mekadosh her. So now we're saying he has the right to be Mekadosh her, and also he would have the right to sell her. And therefore, even if, so now if after this year, her husband, the Odin passed away, before the Odin passed away, and now she's an Amana, then he'd be able to sell her to a Kohen Gadol. So therefore, so there's not necessarily a solid proof that it creates Erusin only rather than Nisuin. And we'll continue that discussion tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and finish working that out.